Hour number one, as it is every Thursday at 1 o'clock, is Industry Chatter, and my guest today to engage in that is Joe Moy, President and CEO of Capgemini Government Solutions. Joe, it's great to see you. Thanks for coming in today.
Hey, Francis, it's my pleasure. I appreciate you having me.
Give us the pitch on Capgemini and what you do for your government customers.
All right, well, give you a little bit of background on Capgemini itself. Capgemini is a $11 billion, 100,000-plus employee firm based globally around the world. We've been fortunate to have a tremendous level of success serving both public sector clients as well as private sector clients. I think what's unique about us, Francis, is I'd like to think of Capgemini Government Solutions, the business I run that serves our U.S. government work here both at the federal level and the state and local level. I'd like to think what's kind of unique about us is we're a bit of an $11 billion startup in that we're relatively new to this market. Although we've been fortunate to serve a number of federal clients for a number of years, about 24 months ago, we made a conscious decision to invest pretty substantially in growing our presence and, frankly, leveraging some tremendous success that we've had around the world serving other public sector customers. So I'm excited to be here to talk with you for an hour.
The parallels that you see in dealing with our government compared to dealing with governments in other countries?
There's some incredibly unique parallels. A couple of observations I'd share on a very positive front. I think, and I frankly kind of tie it back to the inflection point of 9/11, but there's a lot more interest in collaboration and leading practices across, our friends in other parts of the world, specifically in Europe, where we have a strong position in the public sector market. Everything from tax management, revenue management, collections and optimization. Great example is we're fortunate to serve HMRC, Her Majesty's Revenue and Customs, the equivalent of the IRS for the UK, and some of the customer service applications that they're deploying and solutions they're deploying to make that process more customer friendly, identical challenges to what our IRS is tackling. So great examples where we've been able to kind of leverage some of those leading practices and thought leadership. Mm-hmm. And then, in areas like homeland security, border protection, port patrols, port protection, a lot of the top of mind issues that I think are facing our government, some of our European partners have done some very advanced things in those areas. So we think it's a real opportunity for not only for our company, but more importantly for our country to kind of bring some of those leverage points, if you will, back to the U.S.
Yeah, that would seem to be very valuable because when we have a federal government who, at least from the outside looking in, it appears is still kind of in the exploratory phase of cross-agency collaboration and best practice sharing, would seem that would be the next logical step, is to say, what are people in other countries doing that do the same things that we do, that serve the same people or same kinds of people, or try to serve people in the same way that we serve people or have similar missions?
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And I think the whole opportunity of information exchange, as you point out, whether that's just through departments and components of agencies for our government, or whether that's across countries, there's a clear common denominator, in my opinion, of improving information flow, improving the analysis of information to improve business performance, whether that's in a security or defense position or whether that's in a more customer facing position like the IRS example. But
yeah.
I think the thing that I'm probably I think most excited about is there's a real openness. There's no perfect government out there, so I don't want to pretend that things are happening elsewhere in the world that are tremendously light years ahead of our country, because that's not the case. But where you've got solutions and applications that have been deployed to solve common problems that we're tackling, and you can leverage those leading practices and frankly some of the scars on the shins that are already out there from these deployments, it's, I think, a real opportunity for us.
One thing that I have seen the government do a lot more over the last couple of years is be more receptive to finding ideas from anywhere. For a long time, the conversation revolved around the government should be more like the private sector, or should run more like a business, and that's not entirely – the parallels aren't entirely accurate there, obviously. And so the idea that the agencies are, we're going to look at private sector a little bit, we're going to look at other governments, we're going to look at state and local governments, and that's another thing that popped up a lot more after 9/11, isn't it? The idea that we can look vertically and not just horizontally.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I would tell you, I think, you know, one, there's some great talent and great innovation going on in our government at the federal level and at the state and local level. Clearly, there's leading practices and leverage points in the commercial sectors, and as I've pointed out, globally in other areas of the world. But the opportunity to kind of bring all of those components together as part of the solution or part of the planning effort to identify how we can tackle some of these major opportunities in front of us. I think it is, you know, perfect world if we could pull all that together in one nice little event to be able to tap into that, you know, those various channels of information, I think would be ideal. But realistically, just having the openness that our government seems to be, I think, more inclined to do, reach out to these commercial components, these commercial businesses, leveraging other public sector experiences in the state and local area. I know we're going to talk a little bit about that today, mm-hmm. but, you know, one of the things that I see as a tremendous, you know, as we look to cut costs, improve service to our citizens in the state and local level, the intersection and the integration of our federal programs with these state programs is just absolutely key. You know, I think in the past, possibly there was just a funding relationship.
Yeah.
We will fund this program to help you, you know, process unemployment insurance as an example. And it's becoming more and more critical that the Department of Labor is tightly integrated with these states and their unemployment insurance agencies to ensure that we're not only administering benefits, but that we're identifying fraud and error and ensuring that we're, you know, optimizing those dollars, and most importantly, that we're working with those people that are getting those benefits to hopefully get to a point where they don't require those benefits anymore by tying it back to job systems and development and things of that nature. So kind of that closed loop environment in this example of working with the states and the federal components and, you know, frankly, in the example of something like fraud detection using commercial leading practices mm-hmm. to give you a total kind of view, if you will, of leading practices to best solve these problems.
Sometimes it seems like agencies are surprised about the sophistication and of the products that are already out there, the things that already exist, rather than we have to start from scratch as the government has been used to doing for so long. And the idea that some of these products are very sophisticated, have evolved tremendously, and it almost is, we'll take it here and put it here, and it will pretty much be up and running pretty quick.
Yeah, I think you're right. And I'll tell you that, I mean, I think the attitude and the approach of our government is changing in a very positive way towards COTS applications, as an example.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it used to be, frankly, we tackle a major program and it was, let's automate this antiquated process so that we can do things exactly the same way with newer technology.
Yeah.
And I think we all have seen that movie a few times.
Yeah.
It always ends the same, right?
Well, and it's part of the reason we have this document that we're going to talk about in a little bit from OMB, the 25-point plan. It's kind of how we got there, right?
Yeah, I think that's absolutely the case. And, you know, when you look at some of the opportunities to leverage COTS applications, you know, I there's examples out there, and I can use a client that I'm familiar with at the USDA where – I think in a major program deployment that they're undertaking right now, not only are they taking a COTS approach to it, but they're really taking a very keen focus on change management, operational and organizational change management, so that the people that are going to be leveraging these applications aren't viewing it as, you're going to make me do my job differently. They're viewing it as technologies that are going to enable me to do my job better, and I'm mm-hmm. going to have a chance to advance and grow my skills in a new area.
Yeah.
I think that's an area that's absolutely critical. And again, I think there's some very positive examples of where that's happening. But it needs to be a more pervasive in our culture, mm-hmm. I believe.
Let's talk more about that and dig into that 25-point plan, because I want to get your thoughts on some of that, some of the elements of that, and what your customers are talking to you about as far as feedback. When we come back on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. My guest is Joe Moy. He's president and CEO of Capgemini Government Solutions, and we'll continue our conversation in a moment.
The top levels of the federal government are talking about agile software development. If you are a federal program manager and would like to explore this topic with your peers, come to a free February breakfast forum brought to you by Solutions Developers. Our speaker will be Jim York, nationally known Scrum trainer at AFEI headquarters near the Courthouse Metro, and you'll be out by 9 a.m., moderated by me, John Gilroy. More details at AFEI.org, and then click on events.
How do you help workers connect the right way the first time to speed decision-making and elevate efficiency and productivity? If you're the implementer, how do you implement presence-based mobility strategies while balancing today's communications innovation and productivity? Today's workspaces are wherever you are, throughout the building, across campus, in an airport, or the other side of the world. In part three of a panel discussion series, the Future of Public Sector Workforce and Workspace Sustainability Series on Federal News Radio 1500 AM, panelists will examine how you define, manage, and more importantly, increase collaboration in this environment. With a society that is highly dispersed and on at all times, the level of agility you have, the speed of decision-making capability, and the efficiency you need to deliver actionable information to a mobile workforce and population is critical. Quickly getting information in a form you can use, anywhere, anytime. Tune in January 25th at noon. For more information, go to federalnewsradio.com, keyword work.
Today, you're being asked to make every dollar count more, to do more with less and still less, and to continue to serve and protect. Yes, if you're in government, making tough choices just keeps getting tougher. Turn to Deloitte. We have the people, insight, and experience to help you afford more today, prepare for tomorrow, and help government help America. Insights and opportunities at Deloitte.com/federal.
Hey there, I'm Christopher Dorabeck. Here's what we're working on for the Dorabeck Insider this afternoon. Today, the 50th anniversary of the inauguration of President John F. Kennedy. You can probably recite the words of his call to service. Well, the edits of that speech, they're now available online. The Kennedy Presidential Library, the first to go online. We'll talk to him. And we'll get GAO's assessment of the 2010 tax filing season this afternoon, 3 to 7, on the Dorabeck Insider. It's right here on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com. Thanks for listening to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Industry chatter today with Joe Moy of Capgemini Government Solutions. And we mentioned the 25-point plan from OMB, from Vivek Kundra specifically, in the last segment. When that first came out, it's been, what, a month or a month and a half or so ago. As you reviewed it, what was the first thing or two that jumped out at you that either said, wow, that's new, wow, we should have been doing, the agency should have been doing that all along, or whatever? What struck you right off the bat about it?
Yeah, I think, you know, my initial reaction was it was very practical. Mm-hmm. Although, you know, a 25-point plan is a large number of points to,
a lot
have
of bullet
to,
points,
to manage
yeah.
through, no question about it. But I think, you know, it's compartmentalized around several key themes. And I think one area in particular, and we chatted a little bit about this earlier, is, you know, strengthening our program management, our QA, and our oversight of these major initiatives.
Mm-hmm.
You know, compartmentalizing deliverables, although, you know, that sounds like a simple thing. It's not as simple as saying, well, you know, in a major, you know, system deployment, you can't always compartmentalize it into bite-sized chunks. But I think there are, in many, many cases, and probably across all of the programs, if you were able to dissect them in our government, opportunities to deploy functionality quicker,
mm-hmm.
opportunities to not focus on, you know, getting 100% of the functionality when 90% will do the job,
mm-hmm.
Opportunities to provide better quality assurance and accountability early in the cycle of these programs. I mean, to me, I think of everything that is covered in this 25-point plan, the overall focus on program improvement is, where we're going to get the biggest bang for the buck. And I think, certainly where my business is focused on helping the government.
When it comes to the idea of being satisfied with 90% functionality, say, I've heard it described as a number of different things, the 85% solution and so on. Are agencies getting better, do you think, at being content with that and not being pulled into the idea that, oh, we're going to keep rewriting requirements until it does every single little thing and has every single little bell and whistle that we think it should have for the foreseeable future?
Yeah, it's a very good question. Francis, I think from my seat in the stands, I think there's two issues in there. One is, not necessarily focusing on requirements that aren't of high impact and aren't critical, if you will, mission critical. And then the other is, and probably the bigger area of a problem for us is really honing in on the true requirements. I think some of the processes that our government executes on tend to be very onerous as it relates to requirements gathering, very lengthy. They're not iterative by nature. They're not visual by nature in a lot of ways. And users today want to be able to visualize what it is they're describing that requirement to be.
Mm-hmm.
And we've typically written it down on a piece of paper, put it into a form, achieved a check in the box for a process, and then lo and behold, when it gets developed, that's not what I was looking for.
Right.
So I think one of the things that, again, is important for us to embrace as a community in these program initiatives is the need to use some available technologies and approaches to deploy or gain a consensus, if you will, on these requirements to a much higher degree of accuracy.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's, not so much, is it 90% of what I needed? Is it 99 or is it 85? It's, hey, I got so much of what I wanted and it was spot on accurate with what I was looking for that it hits the mark.
That conversation, whenever we go there, and we're going to take a break here in a second, so I want to come back to it. But that conversation reminds me of something that I was talking about with the morning team when I was on the air this morning talking about you coming on the show. And that is the idea that I wonder if sometimes we get so wrapped up in the procurement process and the requirements process and so on that we lose sight of the fact that the mission of the agency isn't to successfully complete projects. It's to collect revenue from the taxpayer, or it's to provide a service to the citizen, or it's to keep the food supply safe or kill the bad guys or whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe we get wrapped up too much in these kinds of things that, in the broad sense of somebody at an agency that's actually meeting the mission at the tip of the spear, whether it's a civilian agency or military, I'll use that phrase, that maybe we think about that part of it too much and not about what's the person actually going to do who has to use this thing or use the system or whatever
right.
when they finally get their hands on it.
Right. Yeah. I think that's absolutely, accurate. And again, you use your example of the procurement limitations and our procurement process has a purpose.
Mm-hmm.
And it serves a good purpose. There needs to be ways to expedite the process and improve upon the ability to bring in some innovation that can address, what we're trying to accomplish here in more rapid and effective program deployment.
Let's talk about that some more when we come back from the break. Joe Moy of Capgemini is my guest on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. It's In Depth with Francis Rose, back in a moment.
I'm Chris Maurer, CNBC Business Radio. Stocks are lower. The Dow's down 27 points. The Nasdaq lower by 26. Oil prices are down $2 to $88 a barrel. That's following an unexpected rise in domestic crude inventories. The Labor Department says jobless claims fell last week by 37,000 to 404,000. This marks the sharpest decline in nearly a year. Meantime, the National Association of Realtors says sales of existing homes rose more than 12% last month to 5.28 million. That's the first time the rate has pushed above 5 million since June. Southwestern Airlines is flying high, the low-fare airliner posting a 13% profit in its fiscal fourth quarter, the carrier getting a boost from more traffic and higher fares. And all eyes will be on Google after the market close when it comes out with its latest quarterly update. Chris Maurer, CNBC Business Radio.
Everybody knows that Acura cars and SUVs have a reputation for quality, reliability, and exceptional engineering. That's why buying a certified pre-owned Acura is such an easy decision. And it's even easier during the Engineer to Last sales event. Right now, you'll find exceptional savings on every certified pre-owned Acura, including 0.9% APR for well-qualified customers. Visit your local Acura dealer or Acura.com today. Offer ends January 31st, 2011. See dealer for details.
Intuit Small Business presents Payroll in 30 seconds. Just type employee hours into Intuit Online Payroll. Wages and taxes are calculated automatically. A few more clicks to print paychecks or make a direct deposit, and we're done. In our remaining time, here's a flock of pigeons playing ragtime piano with their beaks. Try Intuit Online Payroll free for 30 days at Intuit.com. We do the legwork so you can do what you love. Intuit. Small business rejoice.
A persistent sentinel targeted
facing
illegal
all government
boiler room.
Agencies today is disposal of their confidential documents or other sensitive material. The best solution is turning your confidential files into energy. That's right, energy. Get clean and go green with Energy Recovery Operations on Aberdeen Proving Ground in Edgewood, Maryland. Since 1988, Energy Recovery has destroyed all sorts of government confidential records and magnetic media while producing energy. There is complete destruction. Do the green thing. Turn your government confidential records into energy. Go to energyrecoveryonline.com or call 410-679-6200. Your mission is possible. Stop identity theft. Burn your government-sensitive records. Log on to energyrecoveryonline.com or call 410-679-6200. That's energyrecoveryonline.com. This message will self-destruct in 3 seconds. 3, 2, 1.
Things just don't happen. You need a plan. A federal career can last 30 years or more, and so can federal retirement. Tune in each Monday at 10 a.m. to get the information you need to plan your course for financial security, solid benefits, and optimum health care. 100% focused on the federal employee for your benefit. Presented by NITP has the answers to your mid-career and retirement planning questions. Listen to For Your Benefit Mondays at 10 a.m. on 1500 a.m. Federal News Radio for an hour that can change your future.
There are those who dedicate themselves to a sense of honor, to a life of courage, and a commitment to something greater than themselves. They have always defended this nation and each other. They still do. The few, the proud.
Hi, I'm Denise Ballou of the FBI. The case was revealed in December 1995. Operation Senior Sentinel targeted illegal boiler rooms and telemarketing fraud.
The case was hugely significant in that it's one of the few, if not only, instances I can think of where an entire crime problem was basically wiped out by very focused, dramatic investigation.
Keith Slaughter is special agent in charge of FBI San Diego. Formerly in Miami, he initiated the undercover operation that evolved into Senior Sentinel.
These were telemarketers who were really, really bad individuals who were promising big prizes and a lot of different things, preying on customers, especially the elderly.
Many were conned into losing their life savings, but the tables were turned.
Instead of using undercover agents in those cases, we used a combination of retired agents and retired citizens affiliated with the AARP to pose as victims.
Ultimately, about 1,200 arrests and hundreds of convictions. I'm Denise Ballou of the Bureau on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Why do I serve in the U.S. Navy?
For freedom.
Freedom of religion.
What America stands for.
Why do I serve in the U.S. Navy? For honor.
Everybody. And watch out for everybody.
Freedom to vote.
Democracy.
Freedom to go outside and play with my kids.
I joined the Navy to serve my country.
Every freedom that we have.
The right to raise our kids in peace.
My little brother.
my wife, my kids,
our children's children.
The United States Navy.
It's not for ourselves alone that we serve.
Thanks for listening to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Joe Moy of Capgemini Government Solutions, my guest on Industry Chatter. And a reminder, in hour number two, my conversation with former CIA Director James Woolsey was in on Monday, talking about energy renewability and alternative energy sources and what the government's role in that can or should be. That's the second hour of the program today. Joe, before the break, we were talking about requirements and the progress, or in some cases lack thereof, being made when it comes to setting requirements before programs begin. That was one of the points in this plan was, hey, the way I read it, the way I translated it in my brain was, it's okay for you, Mr. and Ms. Agency official, to talk to the vendors beforehand. Keep it open, keep it transparent, keep everything above board, give everybody the same access to the same information, but talk to industry so that you can understand what's possible before you set the requirements and then have to change them 50 times. Did I get the translation right?
No, I think that's probably a fair translation of how this came forward. You know, I'll take it a step forward, and that is that we've got to, you know, in that, allow for some level of flexibility for requirements validation before we launch these programs. And it's not that the government can't get it right, but the government isn't always tapping into the available resources and knowledge base and other leading practices out there to nail these down to a level of accuracy. I'd commented a moment ago about tools such as rapid design and visualization, where you're able to let that user on the front line, who's ultimately going to be the one, you know, with the keystrokes and mouse clicks driving this application for whatever business purpose it serves, mm-hmm. you know, getting them to the point where they're not only comfortable with it, but they're confident that those requirements are going to meet the actual needs of providing the service that they provide. And as I say that, it just sounds so simple and mm-hmm. so obvious. But in this age of visualization and innovation and social media, there's so much more available, I think, in driving out the requirements process to a level where your percentage of accuracy goes up, you know, radically. And there's great examples of that in the private sector. I can mm-hmm. point to General Motors, where they've taken $1 billion out of application deployment by getting their requirements into the 90s percentiles of accuracy versus in the 70s and 80s, mm-hmm. and what that 15% improvement saves them. So I think it's, you know, similar challenge. But I think back to your point, relative to the OMB initiative, providing some flexibility in the procurement process to not be so rigid and locked down, if you will, and having a validation stage before somebody is to embark on, or multiple validation stages, mm-hmm. I should say, before we even embark on development.
Yeah. How are the agencies doing at bringing those stakeholders, end users, whatever you want to call them, into the requirements process? Are we still kind of back where we were a number of years ago, where you pretty much had a requirements team and they might ask a few questions, but they pretty much designed whatever it was going to be or do or work or whatever, and then here, you've never heard of anything before, but this is the end result?
Yeah, it's I'm going to take the glasses half full answer to that.
I like your style.
Yeah, and I think there's improvement. I think there's a room for a lot more improvement. Mm-hmm. Using techniques and methodologies to pull stakeholders together in accelerated fashions to not only drive out some of these requirements, but more importantly, gain some consensus and lockdown and agreement on the go-forward strategy. You know, the give-and-take approach has to exist. You know, we tend to let everybody get what they want versus truly embarking on exercises to, you know, look where there are synergies and opportunities to maybe eliminate certain components of a solution or a program that across the board makes more sense than it might individually for, you know, a department or a component of that solution. But, you know, long story short, I think we're making progress. I think our government has to tap into better than we do today, available resources around, you know, driving out requirements in collaborative, accelerated fashions and vehicles that are available to you in industry. And I think leveraging some of the tools and technologies of which, I guess, you know, to share a frustration, you know, I introduce a capability to a client and you'll find out that, we've got that technology. We just don't have anybody trained on it. We haven't been able to leverage it and use it. And, oh, by the way, we really haven't looked into other constituents in the market that might have used it to their success that, you know, we could copy. And, you know, again, I mean, that's, as much as that may sound as a criticism, I think it's just the nature of the beast.
Yeah.
We're so large sometimes we can't kind of do the obvious thing.
It seems to me one of the elements of this that I imagine made you pretty happy was the cloud-first policy moving forward. Why do you think that – well, I'm not going to put words in mouth. Do you think that was important, and if so, why?
Oh, I don't think there's any question that cloud and virtualization have a tremendous – or will have a tremendous place in the reduction of costs and improvement of efficiency across our government. So I'm absolutely, you know, believe in Vivek's position. It's always, I had an opportunity to meet with him a few weeks ago, and clearly that's front and center in his priorities, and I think rightfully so. Now, why and how, I guess, are the $6 million question.
Yeah, and the how part of it seems to me to be the most complex, because people are starting to understand, I think, in the agencies a lot better that there are so many different flavors of it, that you can do it a number of different ways. Let's talk some more about that element of this plan when we come back on Federal News Radio 1500 AM, the different kinds of cloud options you've got. Joe Moy, my guest from Capgemini Government Solutions on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
Underlying battle is trying to lay out the framework for how we're going to deliver services over the internet without saturating the backbone, and do it in a way that you don't censor the internet, which is what net neutrality is getting at, but simply try to moderate bandwidth in a way which is fair.
Stay up to date with technology. It's Stratford University's Tech Talk Radio, Saturday mornings from 9 to 10 on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
Hello, my federal friends. It's the Geico Gecko, and I've got good news for you. I might even say it's some of the best news ever. Okay, well, definitely in the top three. The big news. Geico now offers discounts for most federal employees GS7 or above, which is no doubt a lot of you out there. So you could be saving hundreds of dollars on your car insurance, all with a company that began over 70 years ago with the sole purpose of serving government employees like yourself. Yeah, that's right. Geico, the government employees insurance company. And today, well, we're the third largest car insurance company in the nation. And did you know about Geico's 97% customer satisfaction rate? Well, saving money tends to make people rather happy, I think. So congrats again to those federal employees GS7 or above. Welcome to the Savings Club. Mike?
Got it. Hey, folks, this is Mike Causey. The Gecko's right. Discounts are available for most federal employees GS7, the equivalent, or above. Just call Geico at 1-800-947-AUTO, go to geico.com, or visit your local Geico office to see how much you could save.
Newsmakers on the Dorabeck Insider.
Tom Trabucco, Director of External Affairs at the Federal Retirement Thrift Investment Board.
Somebody noticed a change in their account balance that didn't reflect contributions,
right,
or earnings. So what we did is activated our core at the call centers to give them information for any of these folks to tell them of our plan to get this right. We'll notify all affected participants, offer to take the funds back, reverse the transaction, and make them whole.
Hear the entire interview online. FederalNewsRadio.com/DorabeckInsider.
We're back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Joe Moy of Capgemini Government Solutions, my guest for Industry Chatter today. and talking about cloud computing, and I've talked a lot about cloud computing over the last couple of years on this show, Joe. I am hearing more that agencies understand the benefits. Obviously, they're now being driven that way by OMB, whether they like it or not. And most people do, to be fair. But there's still the issue, as you raised before the break, of how to do it. And what there are a couple different kinds of cloud computing, and then there are subtypes within that.
Mm-hmm.
When an agency says to you, okay, we know we need to do this, we're being told now we have to do it, we need to move forward with this, what's, like, maybe even what's before step one in trying to analyze needs and figure out which way to go?
Yeah, I think, in my mind, and we actually, you know, have done some projects recently where we help clients rationalize their infrastructure as a starting point. You don't want to just say, I can deploy cloud across my entire application suite. Mm-hmm. You need to start, as I would argue with most programs, with, you know, a logical first step or a logical first application area to prove out what it is that you're, you know, attempting to make more efficient. You need to, and again, I think from a cost benefit perspective, really understand, you know, what is the underlying infrastructure today? What are the licensing obligations? So on and so forth. I think then you kind of get into the usability question. You and I were chatting during the break about email as an example. I mean, that's probably one of the most obvious areas of opportunity, you know, where you could quickly reduce substantial infrastructures within departments and across departments in our government. And clearly that's one of the examples Vivek actually points out in his his report here. I would say that the big hurdle for us is to not approach cloud in the typical siloed fashion that we have. It doesn't mean that the Department of Homeland Security wouldn't want to have their own private cloud for certain initiatives. Mm-hmm. Obviously, that makes all the sense in the world, as it does for all of our departments out there. But where you try to get a call it, you know, G cloud, I guess was the latest phraseology to describe the government cloud, really the public cloud for the government, if you will. Really breaking down some of the silos so that we can increase, you know, the cost savings radically by, you know, combining forces and combining infrastructures and deploying, you know, these applications as a service to support multiple departments. I mean, again, it seems so logical, but as you and I both know, working from department to department is a challenge.
Yeah.
It's an uphill battle for the most part. But, you know, I think when it comes down to the decisions that, you know, these leaders are going to have to make around doing more with less, and somebody can show them a justification where, you know, leveraging an application like email cross-department can save, you know, umpteen tens of millions of dollars for your area and frankly improve your service. It would be illogical that we'd let the legacy boundaries, if you will, you know, impede progress.
You use the word legacy, and that's one that when it comes to government IT, you hear over and over again because there are all these things in place. How are agencies doing at understanding that with some of the technologies that are available, cloud's one of them, that day might be over because when you're buying these things as a service, you're getting all the latest pretty much. You're getting it as you go along. You're getting what's new as you go along instead of you've got to buy this and you're stuck with it for the next 20 years.
Yeah, you're right, and it's I think it creates an interesting opportunity for application swap out as an example. Not only are you getting the latest version of an application that might perform a particular function, but we recently deployed a cloud implementation in the UK for Royal Mail, which is their equivalent of the US Post Office. It was fascinating. I actually had our team in presenting to some executives at the IRS, Terry Milholland and his staff, around this exact subject, really trying to provide some thought leadership and provoke ideas in this area. And, you know, number one, they're doing a great job really evaluating now how their strategy will evolve. But I think one of the most telling examples in the Royal Mail case was the cost savings just associated with being able to move applications in and out, depending on how the vendor wanted to approach a pricing strategy, mm-hmm. depending on improved functionality that might solve, you know, your need more effectively, more efficiently. It creates a competition, a different level of competition among those suppliers that's mm-hmm. very much to the user's benefit or the government's benefit.
Yeah.
So I think there's some fantastic upside there, and there's living examples of where it's, you know, providing that level of impact.
Was there anything in this plan that after you read through, you said, hey, wait a minute, he didn't include blank. There was something that maybe you thought should have been in there that wasn't, or something maybe that you've seen some agencies starting to do already mm-hmm. That could make a difference for other agencies that could have been added?
Yeah, it's and I think it's inherent in this plan, but, you know, the devil's always in the details.
Uh-huh.
I think modernizing some of our deployment processes, and again, I think I'd argue it's probably inherently described in here, but I think we need to be more concrete about it. I look at something like DoD 5000.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly has its merits and has proven to have its merits in certain areas. It's very constraining sometimes on IT projects, especially IT projects where you're trying to iterate more, deliver more quickly. You know, some of the processes associated with building a weapon system are very different than deploying a COTS application, and
mm-hmm.
it tends to elongate some of these ability to take time to value, as I like to call it, deploying those applications, getting the users to realize the benefit of those applications. So I think we've got to take it, I guess what I would argue, and again, devil's always in the details, we've got to take it down to a level of granularity and a level of action now.
Mm-hmm.
And it's got to be spelled out in some flexibility to change legacy processes that I would argue are sometimes, you know, not advancing progress.
Yeah. One of the changes that Secretary Gates has made at the Pentagon that's caused a lot of raised eyebrows in the IT community is the way he's restructured the IT shop there, changed the title of what was formerly the Chief Information Officer. Terry Takei is in that job now, and it's been restructured so that she's not a Senate confirm anymore. And we've detailed those changes ad infinitum at federalnewsradio.com. Does any of that mean anything to you in the vendor community as far as how that structure operates?
Well, I think, you know, a couple of observations. One, I think bringing in people like Terry that, you know, aren't as ingrained, if you will, in the federal arena. Obviously, coming from California, she's got managed a pretty large responsibility out there.
Mm-hmm.
But again, to what we were discussing earlier, bringing a different set of eyes and maybe a different approach to solving some of these problems from her vantage point. You know, whether the change in the structure makes it more flexible or easier to bring people in from industry, you know, bring people in mm-hmm. without, frankly, some of the scrutiny. You know, I've led a pretty good, clean life. I don't know that I'd want to go through
that
process myself.
Yeah.
So I think where it enables the ability to bring in, you know, more external talent in some cases, certainly I see advantages to that. Until that organization plays out specific to DOD, I can't really point to any impact that, mm-hmm. that's certainly had in my business.
Joe Moy is the president and CEO of Capgemini Government Solutions, my guest on Industry Chatter on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. We'll wrap up our conversation in just a moment.
It's not every day that a Washington Monument celebrates a major milestone, but this year, the University of the District of Columbia is marking its 160th anniversary. Since 1851, they've made academic and professional dreams come true for thousands of ambitious Washingtonians. Join them as they commemorate 160 years of scholarship and achievement with a series of events, starting with a birthday gala January 29th. Learn more at udc.edu/160.
Video teleconferencing solutions are changing the way people communicate by breaking down walls and enabling face-to-face communication, regardless of distance or environment. Tanberg, now a part of Cisco, developed Break Down the Walls to provide a window into the ways government, education, and healthcare organizations are using VTC solutions to help them operate more effectively and efficiently, and the ways video solutions can be used to address challenges facing public sector organizations today. Learn more at BreakDownTheWalls.com.
Today's work environment is as much a social system as it is one of productivity. If you're a professional in human resources or training and development, UMBC's Masters in Industrial Organizational Psychology can help you become a more strategic thinker with classes designed for the busy professional. Attend UMBC's IO Psych Info Session Wednesday, January 26th, 6:30 p.m. at the universities at Shady Grove in Rockville, Maryland. Reserve your space at umbc.edu/IO today.
A persistent problem facing all government agencies today is disposal of their confidential documents or other sensitive material. The best solution is turning your confidential files into energy. That's right, energy. Get clean and go green with Energy Recovery Operations on Aberdeen Proving Ground in Edgewood, Maryland. Since 1988, Energy Recovery has destroyed all sorts of government confidential records and magnetic media while producing energy. There is complete destruction. Do the green thing. Turn your government confidential records into energy. Go to energyrecoveryonline.com or call 410-679-6200. Your mission is possible. Stop identity theft. Burn your government-sensitive records. Log on to energyrecoveryonline.com or call 410-679-6200. That's energyrecoveryonline.com. This message will self-destruct in 3 seconds. 3, 2, 1.
I wasn't born to go with the flow. I was born to make a difference, to make waves. I want my sweat and hard work to mean something. I was born to serve in the United States Coast Guard. If you were born ready to lead, to protect, to uphold the law, then visit GoCoastGuard.com. The United States Coast Guard. Born ready.
Sponsored by the United States Coast Guard. In cooperation with the Maryland, D.C., Delaware Broadcasters Association and this station.
What's the buzz in the federal community? Chris Dorbeck knows it. Join Chris for his new show, The Dorbeck Insider, weekday afternoons 3 to 7 on Federal News Radio AM. Chris has the insights on who's coming and who's going, new memos, new contracts, fun and helpful ways for federal managers to improve agency productivity while meeting mission goals. The Dorbeck Insider, building federal community by connecting people. Weekday afternoons on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
We're back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Joe Moy of Capgemini Government Solutions, my guest for Industry Chatter today. And we've covered a lot of ground today, primarily revolving around Vivek's 25-point plan. What else is going on in the marketplace? What trends are you seeing? What questions are people asking you? What kind of feedback are you getting from agencies about the kinds of things that you work with them on?
Yeah, I think, and we've certainly hit on a lot of the top of mind challenges. And, you know, at the end of the day, I think the core concern comes back to budget. You know, obviously with the CR situation, it's caused every department to rethink their priorities. It's creating some challenges and limitation on our government right now, and I think it's something we need to get resolved for all of our benefit. But, you know, it's interesting. We talked a little bit about this in reference to Terry. Certainly, some of the challenges in hiring, and our government is pretty open about the need to bring more talent in-house.
Mm-hmm.
Might surprise you that I actually support that. I think, you know, the right balance of internal and external talent on these programs is key, and it's probably been tilted too much in the external direction.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the right balance. You need to be careful not to swing the pendulum too far because you need a variable model. You
mm-hmm.
can't. No, none of us can sustain everything we do with full-time employees, nor can the government. But, you know, it's interesting. Clients talk about, much like you and I have discussed, the procurement process, the hiring process has similar limitations.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, although the hiring process, I think, by default should be a careful process to ensure you're bringing in somebody that's well vetted out and matches the requirements of a role, it seems to me, and certainly the feedback from my clients, that, you know, they lose a lot of good candidates because it takes months and months
yep.
and months
yep.
to get an that's offer true. Out the door. So, you know, with that being such a high priority for our government and such a pronounced, you know, initiative, to not have, you know, streamline the process a little bit is clearly a challenge.
Mm-hmm. It's been great to have you here. There's a lot more I'd like to cover with you, and we're just about out of time. So at some point, to get your views from the vendor side of the kind of people and what skills they should have that to help you serve the clients better, what kind of people the government should be bringing in, I think would be instructive. So I'd love to have that conversation with you at some point. Joe Moy, President and CEO of Capgemini Government Solutions, thanks for being here today.
It's my pleasure. Appreciate you having me. You do a great job.
Thank you very much. It's kind of you to say that, and great for you to be here. And we'll archive our conversation, Joe, and put it up on federalnewsradio.com/in-depth later this afternoon. And in hour number two of the program today, my conversation with former CIA Director James Woolsey. You'll hear that when In-Depth with Francis Rose continues in just a moment.